Thank you all for coming out. I appreciate, I know how hard it is to leave on a weeknight. I know how hard it is for me to leave on a weeknight, so I appreciate you all coming out. I don't usually give these form of introductions. For those who know me, which are most of the people here, I don't think I suffer from lack of self-confidence. Baruch Hashem, I feel confident in that which I am good at, and I normally actually abhor these types of introductions because I never like to give false humility or say I don't feel like it's appropriate for me to be giving this shiur. But I think those who know me know that I say this from the bottom of my heart, that I am genuinely uncomfortable giving this topic of shiurim. Rabbi Shabtai, who is one of the most l'shem shemayim people that I have ever met in my entire life, that is not hyperbole, really asked me on a number of occasions in different ways to give this shiur. I guess by the third or fourth time, I felt some form of obligation to him and to those who had requested it from him. But I really don't feel comfortable giving it because there are much greater Talmidei Chachamim than me, honestly, in this community, certainly around the world, who are much more fitting to be giving something like this. I wouldn't even say makom she'enish. I think yesh-ish. There are people who could give it, but I'm the one standing here, so I will try my best. I don't know that I have any great chidushim. I don't know that I have anything, you know, so valuable to share with you. But my hope is one thing in giving this series. My hope is at least to give over my passion for learning Be'ian. My passion to why I think it is so important to not just our Talmud Torah, but to our lives as B'nai Torah, to our lives as people who live a life of Torah, and why it is so meaningful to me. I say all the time, and I really mean it, those who learn Daf Yomi on a daily basis, halavai, I should have the schar of those who learn Daf Yomi on a daily basis, Nolam Haba, halavai, I can only imagine what that looks like when they get to Shemayim and HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks over the times they woke up at 5:30 in the morning and didn't snooze their alarm clock and got out of bed, even if they were half asleep or fully asleep in that Daf Yomi shir. I mean it seriously, I can't imagine the schar that they get for that. There's a Gemara in Brachos, which we'll quote now in a positive light, and we'll maybe quote later in a little more of a scary light. But the Gemara in Brachos, Da Vav Mabez, says that Igra de Pirka Riata, that the schar for going to a shir is Riata, is the running to that shir, because the value that we get in just the fact that we're willing to go and show up to a shir, there's amazing schar to that. At the same time, I will admit that I've never been able myself to do Daf Yomi. I've tried. I've tried to do it both on the formal Daf Yomi cycle. I've tried to create my own quote-unquote Daf Yomi, Amud Yomi. And I'll be honest with you, I've never succeeded. Because for me, there's so much that I feel is lost, whether that's my Yetzer HaTov or my Yetzer HaRa, there's so much that I feel is lost in that pursuit. And what I want to share with you at least tonight, the way this series is going to work, so I hope that you all come back. I hope that you come back. I do want to let you know that tonight is going to be a little different than the next two shiurim. So if you like tonight, it's not going to be exactly the same. And if you don't like tonight, it will be different. Tonight's going to be more like general overview, both of why there's a value in learning Be'ian and some kind of general big, large tips when it comes to learning Be'ian. Some that, again, may be overly obvious to people in this room, some that may not be. And then the next two, we're really going to look at a few sugyas, and I'm going to try my best to share what I do when I learn. Again, if I can give over a few principles and what that looks like in preparing shiurim, but more than preparing shiurim, and really learning and sitting and learning a Gemara, what does that look like to analyze a Gemara? And I tried my best. I did work very hard. Whether I'm successful, I don't know. I did try very hard to work on the next two shiurim, on kind of going through a few sugyas and developing them together and showing you a little bit of the tools of what I do when I learn. But tonight is going to be more of an overview, less of any of those, again, less of that specifically. And I want to really share based on an essay in a book called By His Light, which are essays that are not really essays. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, if you have Zecher Tzadik Livracha, if you ever read Rav Aaron Lichtenstein's writings, it's extremely hard to read, it's extremely hard to understand. His English is on a very high level. But there are a few books that were put out by his Talmidim that are lectures that he gave that they wrote. By His Light is one of my all-time favorite Sfarim out there. It's in English. It's very accessible. I highly recommend the entire book. But in that book, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein has an essay specifically dedicated to the importance of learning Be'ian. And he develops an incredible idea, primarily based off this Avos Derub Nosson, which is source number one that we're going to learn together tonight. There's a concept which we hear all the time to be Koveya Itim. Are you Koveya Itim? We should be Koveya Itim. We should set aside time to learn Torah. And that is based on two real marmakomos. One is the question that we're going to get to, the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Lamed Aleph, that says what we're going to be asked when we get up to the world to come. There are six questions we're going to be asked, and one of them is going to be Kavat Itim La Torah. And the other is a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, which says Asei Torascha Keva. But the Avos Derub Nosson, which is our first source tonight, the Avos Derub Nosson says the following, Asei Torascha Keva, that same Lashon as the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, and the Avos Derub Nosson says, Ketzad, how does one make their Torah Keva? If a person learns something from a Talmud Chacham in the Beis Medrash, al yase oso arai, el yase oso keva. Don't make that which you heard in the Beis Medrash arai, you should make it keva. And the question is, what in the world is this talking about? That's what I say to Rasla Keva mean. If I'm in the Beis Medrash and I hear someone say something, so don't make that Torah arai, make that Keva. And Rav Aaron Lichtenstein in this piece is bothered by, what is this Avos Derub Nosson saying? What does it mean that this means Asei Torascha Keva? I thought Asei Torascha Keva meant have a Seder every single day. You can't interrupt me, right? 6 to 7:30, that's when I learn, right? 5:30, whatever your time is, that's my time to learn Torah. Asei Torascha Keva. What does this Avos Derub Nosson mean? So we're going to read inside. I apologize if that's hard, but for me, I think it's important to read inside the words of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein and how he understands it so beautifully. And Rav Aaron Lichtenstein says the following. What does this mean? There are certain facets of our experience that we regard as being peripheral and temporal. We lose no sleep over the fact that they are nothing more than that. They may be pleasant at the time, but you did not expect them to become a permanent aspect of your being. Does a person make any effort to remember what he reads in the newspaper? When you read it, you think it is important to know what is going on in the world. But unless you are a professional historian or archivist, you do not really care whether you remember what happened 10 years ago. Meaning, when I read the newspaper, I may think it's valuable in the moment. I want to know what's going on in the world today. But if you ask me in 10 years from now, you remember that article on February 8th about the war? No, I don't remember that, nor do I care to remember it, because that was 10 years ago. It's not really, not a major event. It's a little event that I don't really care about the debate that happened last night between the two vice president candidates. I don't care about that 10 years later. I might care about that right now. It's important right now to know what's going on in the world. I don't really care. My personal example that I would say, I enjoy watching a movie. I'm one of those people. There are different personalities that walk out of a movie. I'm the personality when you walk out of a movie and everyone's talking about it, and I'm like, I don't even remember that scene. They're like, you don't remember? We just watched it. Like, I'm like, I don't know. It was fun when we watched it. Like, I think I remember the ending. Like, I don't remember what happened. Certainly, you ask me a week later, I have zero recollection of what happened in that movie. I may remember the main characters because I don't really care. I like to watch it. It's like exciting to watch it in the moment. I don't really care about afterwards. Says Rav Aaron, there are other experiences which are somewhat on the borderline between what you want to be permanent and what is ephemeral. Maybe you do not care if you remember what you read in the paper, but if you read a serious magazine, you may want to remember it. Similarly, and this is his example, a person who goes to see a play will probably regard it differently than he would the evening news, but he will not make the kind of effort to remember that a theater critic would in order to be able to analyze and compare it. Meaning, okay, there are things that are in between. I care a little bit. I may not care that much, right? For some people, I would say this is probably sports, right? Again, whether that's right or wrong. For some people, this is probably sports. Like, I care to remember what happened in Game 7 of that NBA Finals. How do you not remember that, right? Okay, I care to remember it a little bit. It's not really my essence. Then says Rav Aaron, but there are things to which a person is committed to the degree that he wants them to be a part of him. When he has that kind of experience, he wants it to be internalized, not to remain ephemeral. This is what the Braisa tells us with regard to Torah. Asei Torascha Keva. See to it that it is ingrained and absorbed, that it becomes a part of you. This, of course, has implications for the nature of the experience at the time. A person who hears a symphony and wants it to become a part of his musical repertoire will listen to it differently than a person for whom it is only so much background music. It is a different kind of exposure and experience. There is a certain intensity and seriousness. If you want something to remain with you, you must immerse yourself in it. And this, to me, is the most powerful and important idea and the distinction between learning be'ian, and all the other learning that we tend to do. And when I say right now, I hope it doesn't come off to sound harif or intense. I just mean it to be the truth. It is amazing and incredible, and I don't want to not emphasize it enough, how many people go to shiurim, how many people, right, learn daf yomi. It is an amazing thing, and I have only good things to say about it, and I hope that nothing that I say sounds negative towards that. It is incredible. At the same time, how often, right, do you walk out of a Shabbos afternoon class, or, that was a good shiur, that was a great shiur, yeah, okay, let's go, what's going on next, let's move on to the next activity, right, that was good, right, same way you walk out of a movie, right, that was a good movie, that was a nice movie, I enjoyed it, not such a great movie, you know what, I didn't really like that speaker so much, it wasn't so great, honestly, the first story was really not great, and I was kind of bored after that, he was reading too much inside, right, we go to it, it's an experience, like going to the movies, we treat it very similarly sometimes to going to the movies, right, I go to the movies, I like the movie, I might not like the movie, right, I certainly, right, am not going to try and remember that, right? I'm not going to try and hold on to that. I'm not going to try and chazer it. We'll talk about getting on later, and I know this sounds obvious, but I dare say, how many of us ever take notes anymore when we go to a shoot? Right? We're not really, I don't care that much, right? I care, it's cute, it's nice, it's a nice idea, right? But we don't really hold on to it, right? There are so many people, right, who genuinely, right, lament and talk about, right, I learned daf yomi, I learned an entire mesechta, mesechas Erevin, and I still don't really know one word, right? And they're sad about it, because they do feel badly about it, right? And there are other people, and again, and it's beautiful, and I don't mean to say, again, it's beautiful, right? But what are we holding on to? Do we even care to hold on to it? Not are we holding on to it. We'll get to that. Do I even care to hold on to it? Do I even care to really know what's going on here? Do I care to be someone who's taking it seriously, or this is, as the Raron calls it, background music? It's a nice show. That's nice to hear, but it's not really something that I take seriously. So go back to the Avos Reb Nosson. Asei Torascha Keva. What does that mean? If you hear something in the Beis Medrash, Al Yasa So Rai, don't view it as temporary. Oh, it's passing, it's fleeting. Ela Yasa So Keva. Make that keva, make that permanent, make that a part of what you really care about, something that is valuable to you. You're an ingrain and absorb it, as Rav Aaron says, it becomes a part of you. And Rav Aaron takes it a step further. I was debating challenging you. It's on the sheet, so I'm not going to challenge you. I did it with one person just for fun, someone who I consider to be a Talmud Chacham. Right? There are six questions in the Gemara in Shabbos. That we are going to be asked when we get to the world to come. That's what the Gemara says. There are six questions that we're going to be asked. I tested this one Talmud Chacham. I consider him to be a legitimate Talmud Chacham. And I said, I bet you can name the first four. I said, you're not going to remember the last two. And I said, I'm not judging you. I wouldn't remember the last two either. But the first four, who'd remember? Now, I'm not going to test everyone here in this room. But there are six questions that the Gemara says are going to be asked when we get to the world to come. I would say the first four, either you know them already, or if I say them to you, you're going to be like, oh yeah, I knew that was one of the six. Most people in this room, right? We'll go through it. Amar Rava, the Gemara in Shabbos, Aflamad Aleph, says, B'shah shemachnis adam ladin, at the moment when a person gets entered into judgment, omrim lo, they're going to say to him, nasata v'nasata be'amuna, did you do your business honestly? Oh, yeah, I remember that one. Kavat itim la Torah, did you set a time to Torah? Yep, remember that one. Asakta b'privya rivya, were you busy in the mitzvah privya rivya of having children? Yep, got that one. Tzipisili Yeshua, yeah, I remember that's one of them. Tzipisili Yeshua, did you hope for Mashiach? And then there's two more. And you rarely ever hear a drasha on these two because, quite honestly, they seem a little strange compared to the first four. The first four, you're like, yeah, those are all big, important, right? Pilpalta b'chachma. Pilpalta, did you analyze wisdom? And Havanta Davar Mitoch Davar, did you understand one thing from another, right? The first four, you got me, you had me, I was good, right? These seem like really particular, right? Pilpalta B'chachma, Havanta Davar Mitoch Davar, these are very specific things. If you look at Rav Aaron, he continues, he says something incredible about these questions, and I want to read again this whole piece inside. Says Rav Aaron, this radical demand to make Torah keva, which one would not expect of a layman in other areas, represents a different kind of commitment. Of course, it reflects the tremendous importance we assign to Torah within our perception of the ordinary person's spiritual life. This is heightened by the concluding questions in the catalog in the Gemara Shabbos. One might have thought that even if a layman is required to learn Torah, it is enough for him to engage it in a shallow manner. Let him learn Bekiyas, maybe some Mishnayos, etc. in-depth study is the realm of the Ben Yeshiva, or the professional Lamdin. Do we expect of someone who goes to a concert to read up on the literature? Of course not. Says Rav Aaron, to phrase it a little differently, I understand the first question, right? Kavat itim la Torah. But the standard person's going to go to Shemayim and Hashem's going to ask him, Pilpalta b'chachma? Were you really mefalpil in the sugya? Did you understand one thing from another? Were you able to... That's what we're asked out of the... It's not, again, the Talmud Chacham. This is the layman. This is the regular average person. Says Rav Aaron something incredible. Incredible. But the Gemara indicates otherwise. A person is asked by the heavenly tribunal not just whether he made time for learning, but what was the quality of that learning? Pilpalta b'chachma? Hivan t'davar mitoch davar? Did you debate matters of wisdom? Did you infer one thing from another? Or did you just run through the material superficially skimming it? This is far from what is expected precisely because it is superficial. The three questions in the Gemara are connected. Listen carefully. I bolded and I underlined to show you how important this is, and this is probably the most important part of the introduction. To the extent that a person is not mefalpel b'chachma and does not strive to be maven davar mitoch davar, then he has not been koveya itim. His learning lacks keva. In order for it to be keva, it must have a certain depth. One has to be engaged both emotionally and intellectually. Says Rav Aaron, you want to really be koveya itim la Torah? What does that mean? Does that mean just that I set time to make sure I sit through a shiur? It was nice. It was good. Okay, came in one ear, went out the other, and that's okay because I sat and I learned the shiur. Or did I try and understand what the person was saying? Did I try and read that Ma'ariv Malkum, really understand it? Every single week, personal plug, we go through Shnaya Mikra, we read the Torah portion every single week. Do we think about what we're reading every single? Do we take in the message that we're supposed to be given by the Psukim in the Torah, by the Rashi's, by what's going on here, right? Are we trying to understand it, or we're just trying to check another box? Did I check the Talmud Torah box, right? We hear often, right? I checked the Tefillah box, I showed up to Shacharis, I checked this box, I checked that box, right? But did we actually try and understand it, or we're trying to check a box? And says Rav Aaron, consequently, in order to make your Torah keva, it has to be accompanied by a certain grappling and wrestling, trying to plumb the depths of what you are learning. Every day, the ordinary Jew, not just the Rosh Yeshiva, prays, Avinu Avarachaman, Tein Belibenu Lahavin Ulahaskil, our merciful Father, inspire our hearts to understand and to discern. He does not just ask God to give him the desire and the ability to learn Torah, but rather Lahavin Ulahaskil, to penetrate its depths. Of course, not everyone realizes this in great scope, but these are his values. And ultimately, a person is judged not so much by his attainments as by his effort. Says Rav Aaron, the expectation is there. The expectation is that we're going to not just sit there and hear, but we're going to mafal bel b'chachmer. When you try to be hevanta davar mitoch davar, there's going to be some level of analysis, trying to understand it, again, and everyone on their level, and we'll talk about what this means practically. This is now still in the clouds. This is still a very, you know, beautiful ideal. We will talk about what this maybe can look like practically, but I really want to set the stage to the fact of two things. One, there's an expectation. That's where Aaron's point is. There's an expectation with all of us, not just for the Talmidei Chachamim, not just for the Rav of the Shul, not just for the Rosh Kollel, but there's an expectation on the average Jew, the average layman, right, that he is kavat itim laTorah, meaning he has a depth in his learning. He's searching for the depths of his learning. He may not understand everything, you may not get everything, but you're trying to understand it on somewhat of a deeper level. You're not just superficially hearing things and going, okay, it sounds like a nice idea. No, you're trying to understand it, and there's a certain goal to really plumb the depths. Yes. Yes. It would seem to be it's in a terrible order, correct?
Correct.
Agreed. I love it. Maybe. I hope so. I hope you're right. Then we won't be judged as harshly. No. I don't know. I agree with you. Your question is a good question, which is why is it... I agree with you. I had your same question, which is, if according to Rav Aaron saying, right? Why is Aseh Torah Kavatin LaTorah separated from the other two? It's a great question. I'm actually going to model what I'm going to talk about in a minute. It's a good question. And just because we have a good question doesn't mean we reject Rav Aharon. It's a good question. We'll sit on that question. I want to think about it. Maybe you and I can come up with an answer. Maybe we won't. But that's what Rav Aharon said. And it's important to also sometimes be okay with sitting on a question. I want to maybe add one more layer to Rav Aharon and to this introduction, and then we'll start to get into a little bit of the tools for what we're going to talk about. I want to maybe add one more layer. I hope there are people in this room who have heard me say this idea, because it is my absolute favorite number one Torah idea. I hope, Alicia, you have heard this idea before from me. It is for sure my number one idea that I teach all my students and that I try and say as much as possible and try and remind myself about. It is my number one idea. The Shoresh Deya, I actually just spoke about it in Shul when I spoke to him in Chamar a few weeks ago. The word Deya, the Shoresh Deya, Dalet Ayin Hey, in the Torah, is used for two things. The one that we know, which to translate is know or knowledge. Deya is knowing or knowledge. And the word deya is used in a lot of contexts to represent chibur, a connection between two people, between two things. I could give you the sources afterwards, just take my word for it, even though that's not what we generally advise when it comes to learning B'iyan. But the word deya is used in these two contexts. And the reason is very simple. And it's Arashi, Ala Torah, and Bereishis, Yud Ches, Yud Tes. The reason is very simple, because there's a real reciprocal relationship between knowledge and closeness. The closer we are to a person, the more we want to know about them. And the more we know about a person, the closer we become to them. It's very clear in our lives that that is true. I give this example all the time, right? There are two people. Right? One person you say, how was your day? And they start telling you things and you're like bored out of your mind. You're like, I don't really care about like these, you know? And there's another person that they're telling you the same thing. And you're like engaged. You're like, wow, really? Yeah, in the supermarket? They said that too? And why are you more engaged with this person? The two people are telling you the same things. I'll tell you why. Because one person you feel a closeness to and you feel like, I want to know about your life, right? So it seems like a silly story in the supermarket, but it's my wife, it's my child, it's someone that I'm close to. I want to know more about the story. Right? It's someone that I'm not so close to, again, not in a mean way. I don't really care so much about the intricate details of your life. Not because I'm not a bad person. I'm not involved in that way, right? It's too detailed for me to really be invested, right? Because the more I love you, the more I want to know about you, and the more I know about you, the more I'm going to love you. And when it comes to Torah, it's the exact same relationship. The more we know Torah, not the more we sit in Shiurim, not the more we hear Torah and it goes in one ear and out the other, but the more we know Torah and we have it, the more we have it in us, the more we have Torah, the more we come to love Hashem, and the more we come to appreciate His world, the more we come to see everything through that lens. And to take it one step further, the exact piece of Tefillah that Rav Aharon quoted, just read the words, we say them every single day. Source number 5, Avinu of Harachaman, Hamarachim Aleinu, right? So Avinu of Harachaman, our mercy, a Father who has mercy on us, the same Bilibenu, placed in our hearts, Lahavanu Lahaskil, to understand, right, to intellectualize, whatever is Lishmoa, to hear, Lilmo, to learn, Lilami, to teach, Lishmor, to gar, Velasos, and to do, Lakaim is called the Rei Talmud Torah Secha B'Ava, and to fulfill your entire Torah B'Ava. But it continues. It's not just that we want to know your Torah. So we want to know your Torah on every single level, on the deepest levels. We want to know it. We want to keep it. But why do we want to know it? Why do we want to keep it? Right? Light up our eyes with your Torah. Let us see the world through the lens of your Torah. We have your Torah now. We learned your Torah. It's going to light up our world with your Torah. It's going to connect us to your mitzvos through that learning Torah. And it's going to unite our hearts to love you and to fear you, right, through our knowledge of Torah. And this can never be lost. This point can never be lost. This is not just about learning B'iyan. This is any learning of Torah. The goal of learning Torah is because knowledge breeds love, right? And when we love HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're going to see the world through the lens of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? When you love someone, you could finish their sentences, right? You see the world through the lens. You predict how they're going to think, right? When we have Hashem's Torah, we have HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah, it lights up our eyes literally, and we see the world through that lens, and it connects us to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the deepest ways. And everything that we're going to talk about, I really mean this very personally. For me, learning the Iyun is my number one connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It really is. It's my way. So some people, they say Pnimiyas HaTorah, some people it's Tefillah. For me, it's learning the Iyun. When I learn the Iyun, that is my greatest connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And really for me, it's because of this point. Because when we learn the Iyun, and we really think about the ideas, and we let those ideas sit and percolate in our minds, so we start to see the world through the lens of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We start to see the world through that Torah lens, and it's a totally different lens than the lens we have without it. And I'll share with you a story I thought it was like a cute, funny story. When I was in Shalavim for the year, so it was the year that The Making of a Gadol came out. So for those of you who remember The Making of the Gadol, Renatson Kamenetsky wrote this book about the Gadolim, and he shared some stories, and supposedly, again, I never read through the whole book, supposedly some of the stories were very controversial, and therefore it was put into a big ban and put out of print. Now, I regret to this day that they were being sold in my yeshiva outside there for weeks and weeks and weeks on end for like $30, and I should have bought like all of them, because if you look now, they're going for like $1,000 a piece, legit, $1,000 a piece, the original first edition copies. But they got banned, and they got taken off the shelves. So Rav Nassim Kamenetsky is a relative of Rav Ari Waxman, who was the Mashkiach at the time of Shalavim. So they brought him in for Shabbos to be a scholar in residence there in the yeshiva, but it was right after this whole scandal. So he got up, and he spent the entire hour time that he has allotted to speak to explain why his book should not be put in Chirim. That was the entire speech, was why his book should not be put in Chirim. And I don't remember many of the stories, but he said, again, he said, and I guess I'm on his side of this, because he was saying, I don't know why I was put in Chirim for this, but one story that he said was, he put in a story about Rav Baruch Ber, who was a major Talmud of Chaim Soloveitchik. He put in a story of Rav Baruch Ber, that Rav Baruch Ber said about himself that he didn't need to learn Musar. And they said to him, why don't you need to learn Musar? He says, I get my Musar from learning Bein. That's what he had said. That's the story, and that was the story that put him into Chirim. So I'm not going to say I'm exactly like a Baruch Ber. I learn Musars from him, and I find them valuable. But the truth is, I think that story was always stuck with me, because I think there's a real depth to it. That really, if when we learn Bein, and we read certain, again, styles of people who learn Bein in this way, you really do get the Musar from it. Part of the greatness of Rav Soloveitchik, again, not that I'm one to speak of his greatness, nor does he need me to speak of his greatness, you know, but part of the greatness of Rav Soloveitchik and of Aaron Lichtenstein and those types of thinkers is that, like, their machshava is like an Iyun Seder. You don't really feel a difference between reading their Lamdas pieces and reading their machshava pieces, because they use the same analytical tools. And there's a certain level of depth in that, right? When it comes across in that way, that when your mind is trained to think a certain way, so you see the world in that way, and it leads to a certain level of understanding and analysis. Okay, I want to now transition into some thoughts, some quick notes on skills or tips. Some of these at the beginning, I hope are overly obvious, but I can't skip them because I think they're too important to skip them. But I still hope they're overly obvious, and you tell me that it was a waste of time. The first is I quoted a Maharal here. It's the last source that we're going to read together inside. The first is, you can't really learn Be'ian, unless you know some level of Torah. You just can't. There's only so much you can analyze if you don't know what to analyze or how to analyze or what is going on here, right? And it's unfortunate sometimes when we try and, again, we hope that there's like an easy, you know, 3 weeks and I'm a lamdin. That's not how it works. There's no quick tips on how to become a Talmid Chacham. There's no quick tips how to become a lamdin. I apologize if I'm letting you down. There's no quick tips to it. You gotta learn. You gotta sit and learn. And not just learn. You have to like try and know Torah. And the Maharal in source number 6 here laments his generation, about 500 years ago. Va'yizeh yis'onein ha'adam. He says, on this you can, like, again, mourn. Ki gala imenu kavara Torah hoda v'hadra, v'anachnu arumim below Torah. He says, we're naked without Torah. Oyla osa, cherpa v'oyla sabusho, klima sh'nishtaneinu mikol adora shahayu. He says, woe is to us and for the cherpa, for this embarrassment and this disgrace in our generation from the previous generations. Why? V'akol b'shvil shayomar shimachadid asam v'pilpul. That's because in our generation, they say, we're being mafalta. We don't need to know Torah. We're the lamdan, and we learn be'in. Even if this was true, halo amru perek haroe, the Gemara says in Brachos daf samach gimel, haskeis v'shma. What does that mean? Has, v'achar kas kites. What does that mean? Perish Rashi, shasuk, be quiet, v'hazon l'shmoascha, like let you take it in, ashateshkur b'fichach, until it's really clear in your mouth, until you really understand it. V'acharkach, tichatchena v'kiksha ala mashiyish l'hakshav. And then afterwards you could analyze it. V'tarez tirutzim ashateshyashiv l'cha. Meaning, the first thing you have to do is know some Torah, and then you can analyze it. K'drava, like Rava says, the amar Rava l'olam yalame toriachach, yege, first learn Torah, and then analyze it. And says the Maharal, harelecha ki afim hayapilpul shlemes. Even if your analysis is true, sarach sheyakodim elav agiris, you need to learn first. Mikol shekein even more so ki eich yomer shehim echadidin. How can they even say that they're sharp? Ein zalem shematapshin tipshes gomor. This is only foolishness. V'arinenu roos hachidud hazeh masha helu biyadim. And we see in my generation all these people who think they're learning b'ian, they don't know what they're talking about. Now again, the Maharal is speaking very strongly, but I do want to say, first and foremost, our first goal, if our goal is to learn B'iyan, has to also be to know something. We can't just, you know, wake up one day and all of a sudden analyze everything to its depths. We have to know a little bit. We have to try and gain it. And I say that for two reasons. And there are two things that I'm going to push very strongly as an introduction to then my actual tips that are related to learning B'iyan. There are first two introductions and things that I think are so obvious, and I dare say so few people do them. And they are extremely obvious. The first thing is, you need to do chazara. I question how many people, and again, not judgment, I'm just saying it as a statement, I question how many people, not, again, 16-year-olds in high school who are studying for tests, and not 19-year-olds in yeshiva, I question how many people beyond their years of yeshiva ever do chazara. Again, simple chazara. Read the same Gemara twice. If you're doing daf yomi, I get how hard that is. If you have a chavrusa and you're not doing daf yomi, so I strongly recommend, I do this with my chavrusa, which is, okay, I don't have the time. I wish I had the luxury of having 6 hours in my day, you know, 5 hours to go on and 1 hour to chazra. I wish I had the luxury of 1 hour in my day to really divide 45 minutes. I wish I had that luxury. Maybe I should do a better cheshbon nefesh. I don't know I have that luxury. So my chavrusa and I, he knows that I make him at a certain point, we stop and we go back and we chazrit and then we go weiter and then we go back again and we chazrit. We try our best to see every Gemara three times together. But chavrusa, we see three Gemara three times together. And if we have a chavrusa and we're trying to learn B'iyan, we're trying to actually understand something, you need to do chazara. Read the Gemara a second time. Read it a third time. Go through two daf of Gemara and then go back and try and learn it B'iyan. But if you try and just like jump right in and understand everything and analyze it right away, again, it could be in five lines from now the Gemara is going to say something differently and you don't have enough of a real flavor for what's going on here. Learn a little bit first. Again, when I say learn a little bit, obviously we should all be learning through Shas and then, but even on in the small level of whatever stuff that we're trying to learn, learn a little bit and do chazara. Again, I would dare say how few people do it. I'll also say again, I hope overly obvious, but take notes. Again, just because we're adults and we're no longer in school and in classes or in yeshiva, take notes. Whether that notes means can mean a lot of different things. I'll share with you a few things that I do. And again, I think it's never too late to do things like this. One is take notes literally in your Gemara. Make notes in your Gemara if you want to write in your Gemara. Two is I personally type up notes on, I try my best to type up notes in what I learn. I can't promise I always do that well perfectly now with time constraints and the like, but pick something. If this is my learning that I'm going to do, B'iyan, so take notes on it. Again, even if it's paper and pen, but it gives a certain seriousness to it, A, and B, it gives a certain analysis to it that I have to write down that which I'm thinking, right? And I have to write it out. I will say, I'll hold it up for you, right? I spent time writing up notes to prepare this year. The reason I did that, honestly, is because it helps me clarify my thoughts. What am I really going to say? How do I want to say it, right? If I don't have notes so I can wing it, I could wing it, right? But if I don't take notes, then I'm not really thinking through. What do I want to say? How do I want to say it properly? And these things are almost overly obvious. And I hope they're obvious, but I think we often overlook the obvious. And these little things like just simply doing chazara, reading a Gemara twice, is itself a step towards Ian. It's not just a step towards remembering it. It's a step towards Ian because now I have a different perspective on what's going on here. I really understood what I just read. And it's really, really valuable. And I think that, again, too often we don't take notes. You know, in general, when we go to shiurim, we don't take notes. We don't do those types of things. I'll share a story, which was one of the most inspirational stories for me, when it came to learning Torah and Musar about Chazara. My grandmother should live and be well. She should live and be well. She's almost 100 years old. She should live and be well. About 15 years ago, she spends half a year in Israel and half a year in America. So when she's in America, I try and visit her. She lives in New York and Israel. I was in New York. I was living in New York at the time. It was a long time ago. And I went to go visit her. I would say it was, the January time. The opposite. It was like September time. It was around September. And I visit her and I say, Nana, how you doing? How's everything? Good. I'm just, learning. I said, okay, great. She's like the firmest lady you've ever met. She learns all, she goes to every shiur that's ever possible and she loves to sit and learn. So I said, that's great that you're learning. That's so nice. And I look at the table and I'm like a little bit confused. She was very with it at the time. And I said, Nana, you're learning about Purim. It's not Purim time. It's like maybe almost Rosh Hashanah at the time. It's not Purim time. Like, what are you doing learning about Purim? And she goes, oh, she says, you don't know what I do? I said, no, what do you do? She says, well, I'm half a year in Israel. I'm half a year in America. And I go to a lot of shiurim when I'm in Israel, but I want to remember them. So when I come home, I chazer all of them, like, when I'm home. So I'm up to my Purim shiur, like in my series of all the shiurim that I chazer, which is crazy, right? Meaning like it's mind-boggling, but I was so inspired. I was like, I've never done that before. I don't chazer shiurim that I go to, right? But she literally took out her notes and she took out the source sheet and she was chazering the shiur that she had gone to on Purim because she wanted to remember it. It's incredible, right? How many of us ever stop, right? Take the notes in the first place and take them out, right, to chazer the notes. The point is that she wanted to remember it. There was a goal. So the first and foremost, if we want to learn B'iyan, again, we have to chazer, we have to take notes, and we have to really try our best to hold on to it and give it that keva, give it that seriousness that Rav Aaron was talking about. I'm going to run through a few other ideas. I apologize for keep saying it, but I hope they're not too obvious, but I think they're important to say. One thing about learning B'iyan that's very different than learning like B'kiyas or Daf Yomi, is that it does need like a certain yishuv hadas, and it needs a certain amount of time. You can do like a half an amud of daf yomi in like 5 minutes, like while you're waiting like for your wife to get ready to go to the bar mitzvah. You can't really like hop in like 5 minutes of iyan in between things and that. You can't like hop it in between aliyahs during davening. Daf yomi and that kind of learning in a good way, in a very positive way, it lends itself to like catching it on the run and catching it on the fly. To learn B'iyan, it does take more time. I don't even believe, and I don't believe this from my own learning, nor do I recommend it, that all of one's learning should be B'iyan, but we should find a time, right, that we can set aside that this is my Ian theta, right? If we're going to be realistic, we're all working people who are not necessarily, most of us are still working or are working, and we don't have time to sit and learn for hours and hours at end. Halavai, that should be our schedule. But so this is my Ian Seder. I will say in front of him, Rabbi Lanner is my Kodesh HaKadoshim time on Shabbos. We have, on a good week, I would say 2 hours. On a not as good week, I would say at least an hour every Shabbos. But it takes time. You can't just like jump into a sugya and be learning the Ian, right, in 5 minutes. Be like, chopped it, got the Chakira, got the question, got the answer, Sorav Al-Khanan. It doesn't work that way, right? It needs a certain level of Yishuv Hadas to like really be able to sit and think about it. It also needs to be done in a time and a place that we can do it. Again, even though we're adults, to put our phone away, it takes like real thinking. It's not something that we can do while we're juggling 15 other things. If you're going to learn Be'ian, that means you're going to sit and think. It takes time to think about it. In addition to thinking about it in the moment, and this is probably more than anything the reason that I can't do Daf Yomi, I like to sit on things for like a long time. I have many shiurim, many shiurim that I've given that I've prepared over multiple years. When I say I prepared them over multiple years, I don't mean that I'm sitting there every day. It means that I read a Maror Makom, I read a source, or I saw something, and it sat with me for years, wondering, like, what's the pshat in that? What did that mean? And then I'll find something a year later, and I'll be like, oh, that connects to that thing that was bothering me, and I'll put it in my notes. I have a folder on my computer. It's called my new main file. That's what it's called. I used to have a main file, then it became my new main file, and it's like my running sources of many, 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 many Maror Makomos on many different topics, right? And it's organized by the different topics. And I'll put it into there and I'll say, oh, okay, here's another source that connects that thing that's been bothering me. And then 2 years later, again, I'll see another one. I'll be like, that connects, right? Your question, and I'm not joking, that question, why is Papalta Bechach Mevantim Etol Dever, why is that separated from Rekavatim Torah? So let's think about that. Let's sit on that. Let's let it bother us, right? And let's let it bother us over a few years. And while you can't get into an Ian Sugya for 5 minutes, you can let something percolate in your mind when you're waiting and sitting for something and you're trying to think about that Gemara that I just learned today, right? I just learned that Gemara today. What did that really mean? Like, let me try and think about that and wonder about it, right? A Rebbe of mine, Rebbe Moshe Benovitz, recently said a line to me that I loved. He said, "What do you think about on the checkout line? What do you think about when you're waiting on that checkout line? What's on your mind, right?" So again, what's on your mind when you're on the checkout line? He was using it to talk to me about, again, in my life, about what am I focusing on career-wise and where, but the point that I think he was making was very powerful is like, we're always thinking about something, right? So on the checkout line, are we ever thinking about that Gemara that I learned today? Like, what was, you know, Rashi bothered by, or what was Pshat in that Gemara? And when we learn that way, we learn to sit on things and remember them over time. It's an amazingly valuable tool. It takes a different mindset, but to let things sit and let things grow over time and hold on to them. One of my favorite things to say, learning Art Scroll, amazing tool. Art Scroll is an incredible tool. What they did for learning is unbelievable. But there's something that you should always know. Every translation is an explanation. Every translation is an explanation. In fact, when they wanted to translate the Mishnayos into English originally, not Art Scroll, a different translator, I wasn't into English probably actually, it was in Europe, Rav Shlomo Kluger wrote a tshuva in the Leif HaLashomo where he said that it's a big avla, it's a big mistake to translate them out of the original text into English. Why? And it probably wasn't English in that time, whatever language was, German, whatever it may have been. He said, why is it such a mistake? He said, because there's so many different ways to translate it. He said, whose pshat are you quoting? Are you going to quote the Bartanura's pshat? Are you going to quote the Rambam's pshat? Whose read of the Mishnah are you translating it to? And when you choose one, so we just lost the other one, right? We don't know the other pshat. And when you learn through an Art Scroll, and again, I'm a huge pro Art Scroll fan. You will see me using the Art Scrolls in here all the time. I'm very pro Art Scroll. It's a great tool and we should use it. But we should know when we're using it that every translation is an explanation. And ultimately, I hope that I'm not setting the bar too high. I know there's people in different levels in this room. If you really want to learn B'Iyun, you really have to read it in the original text. It's easy to get the shortcut of Art Scroll, but it's a translation and it's an explanation. You're getting the bias of Art Scroll. Now, Art Scroll's bias is a great bias. It's based on Rashi or Tosfos or whatever, but it's a bias, right? It's already taking away from you the ability to really have an opinion on what's going on in the text. And there's so many times where that translation, right, is totally guiding you towards one way of reading the Gemara, and you're now blinded by how to read it properly. In fact, as frustrating as it is, there's no nekudos in the Gemara, right? There's no question marks and periods and commas, and that's also because, honestly, I really believe this, because over time, it's not just that we wanted to keep it hard, although that may be some truth to that, it's also that it's a scary thing because you're putting this as a question mark. But you know what? The other Rishon reads it as an exclamation point. And you're putting the comma there. But you know what? These Rishonim put the comma over here. And there are many times where Rishonim argue on where to place like the comma. How exactly do you read this Gemara? So if you're going to go ahead and be the one who's gutsy enough to put those Nekudos in, so you just took away, right, another way to read this Gemara. And it's really important to realize that if we're going to learn, every translation is an explanation. And for those who are past the Art Scroll stage, I will say, my only really harif thing of the night, I have a real pet peeve of learning Gemara Rashi Masifta. Gemara Rashi Masifta is an absolutely terrible way to learn. I apologize. I hope I'm not offending anyone. I'll tell you why I believe it's a bad way to learn, and I'll explain to you why it's certainly not learning B'Iyun. Masifta is a great tool. If you need to prepare shiurim, if you're a rav who needs to give shiurim and you're asked to give shiurim on a very, very fast basis and you have to pump out new ideas that nobody's heard of, Masifta is a great tool because you just don't have the time to look up in every book that's ever been written. If you're someone who's trying to learn, Masifta is just like a really quick summary of like really deep ideas in a really like superficial way. So I would sooner recommend you read the Art Scroll footnotes, honestly. Read Gemara Rashi Art Scroll footnotes. Masifta is like pretending like you're learning B'Iyun and it's not learning B'Iyun. It's a great tool. It's a tool when it's used properly. But when you learn that way, it's literally almost the opposite of learning B'Iyun. Because learning B'Iyun means to think and to analyze. And reading Masifta is them skipping the thinking and analyzing and them just giving you regurgitation of someone else's thinking and analysis. Again, that doesn't mean not smart people, not wise people who have thought, but you're not analyzing it. You're not thinking at all. It's really, in my opinion, people who just read through a masifta, it's actually hurting their learning. I really believe it. It's not helping their learning be in. It's confusing them with ideas that are just way too much to take in one moment. I know that I get overwhelmed when I open a masifta. I actually get overwhelmed when I open a masifta. Like, who could take in all these ideas in the 3 minutes that you're going to read it? It's not a good way to learn be in. What is a good way to learn be in, and probably the most important way to learn be in, is literally to read the Gemara and Rashi slowly and carefully. It's not any fancy trick or tool. It's most of what I do in my learning, is read the Gemara slowly and carefully and ask questions and stop and think. And don't just read and 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 go, okay, let's go on to the next one. Stop. Read it. Think, right? Think about what's going on here. I probably won't spend so much time on this, so I'll say it now. But those who have learned with me ever know. No, is it a statement of Tana? Is it an Amora? Who's making this statement? What's going on, right, in the flow of this Gemara, right? Stop and think. I just had a Gemara this morning. I was learning Shabbos, Daf Chaf Amud Aleph, with my Chavrusa, and the Gemara quotes a statement of Shmuel, and then the Gemara says, Rebchia, Tani Rebchia, Siyua, L'Shmuel. So it says, Tani Rebchia, Siyua, L'Shmuel, and then it quotes Rebchia. So I stopped and I said to my chavrusa, that doesn't make any sense, right? Shmuel is a first generation Amora. Reb Chiya is a first generation Amora. Why does Reb Chiya support to Shmuel? He doesn't need Reb Chiya, right? And I saw the Maariv Chiya asked that question. Now I'm not sharing that to tell you that I'm such a Talmid Chacham. I'm telling you because, again, you stop and think for a second. Wait, who's talking in this Gemara? Why are they responding to him? What's the language that they're using to respond in this question, right? Why is Rashi feel a need to explain this line and not explain that line? Why is Rashi explaining this like with a few extra words when it seems to be I could have explained it much shorter? That's the greatest learning be'in. That's going to start you off into learning be'in. What I mean by that is just thinking and reading carefully. I think too often we make the mistake, which is why I was giving that strong statement against the masifta. We misunderstand learning be'in to mean knowing a lot of sources. Knowing a lot of sources is great. Knowing a lot of sources makes you seem impressive. Knowing a lot of sources is not necessarily representative of the fact that you're learning be'in. Learning be'in means that I'm trying to be mefalpel b'chachma and havanta davar mitoch davar. I'm trying to really understand what's going on, it's what's in front of me, and I'm trying to analyze it and read it carefully. And I find that so often we skip that step and we just jump to, okay, Rashi said this, Tosos asked this question, I'm going to give you four answers in Tosos. That's great, that's amazing. You just gave me four answers to Tosos' question, but did you stop even and think, why did Tosos ask that question? Did you stop and try and answer Tosos' question before you read the four answers? Like, just think, stop, think. I will say also, ask questions. And ask questions that you don't think you know the answer to, even if you don't know the answer to them, and then let them sit. Don't get stuck necessarily, but ask the questions. Ask every single question that seems ridiculous, that seems silly, that seems basic, but stop and think and ask the questions. I remember, I'll share with you one example of like a question that led me down one of these like shiurim I prepared over a few years. I was learning a Gemara in Brachos on Daf Hey, and the Gemara has an order of a drasha that it quotes, and it seemed to say in the Gemara, it listed Mishnah before Nach, in the order of the Psukim in the Gemara. I'm not giving you the whole sugya, and it sounded like Nach was Torah Shabbal Peh. And I was like, that doesn't, like, and I never stopped and think about it, and I'll ask you if you ever stopped to think about this, but, right, we have Tanakh, Torah Nevi'im and Ksuvim. We generally think of it that Tanakh is Torah Shabbat Tav, and, right, Mishnah and on is Torah Shabbat Peh. And I read that Gemara, and I stopped, and I said, wait a second, it sounds like from this Gemara, it sounded like for a half a second when I was reading the Gemara, that it Nach is Torah Shabbat Peh. And then I was thinking, that can't make sense. And then I was thinking, actually, that can make a lot of sense for a second, because the only Torah that we got directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right, was the Chumash HaChemshei Torah. Right, so if we didn't get the other books from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so how did we get them? Well, we got them orally, actually. That's how we got them. HaKadosh Baruch Hu talked to a Navi, right? And then the Navi had permission to write it down. Now, there's a difference between Hashem writing something down, whatever that means to us, and Hashem telling me something and I'm writing it down, right? So if I'm writing down what Hashem told me, that in some ways actually sounds a lot like what we call the oral Torah, right? And I stopped and I thought about it. And it's one of these topics that I was like, that sounds strange. And then sure enough, over years, I found a few marmakomos. I found that in the Hakdama of the Emes Leach, Rabbi Yaakov Kamnetsky talks about this. But it seems like such a ridiculous thought process, right? The Nach, Nevi'im and Ksuvim is Torah Shebal Peh. But you stop and you think and you analyze it and you wait and you start to brill and you're like, wait, like, let me really ask these questions. Even though these questions that seem super obvious, those questions that, you know, when we were in high school, our Rebbe would say, we don't ask those, you know, you ask those questions. We ask every single question and we really start to think, you know, what's going on over here. I also think it's important, and we'll close with these last ideas. I'm going to give some general guidance of my own opinion. Again, it's not certainly not Torah Misinai. Some general guidance now of what Svarim are good to use to enhance our learning Biyan. If we're here, if you're still with me, and you're still interested in learning Biyan. So I'm going to share with you, again, a few tips in my opinion of what, just to know, like, what Rishonim are doing, what Achronim are doing, and which ones I would recommend in that quest to learn Biyan. I generally would group Rishonim in three basic categories. There's the Rashi category. Rashi is just trying to explain what the Gemara is saying. Not just, I don't want to diminish Rashi. That's Rashi's goal. You're reading a Gemara, you want to understand it, I'll explain it to you. There's Tosfos, which to me is camp number two of Rishonim. Tosfos is trying to make sense of the corpus of Torah Shebaal Peh, meaning, yes, we have this Gemara, but I want to understand this Gemara in Brachos with this Gemara in Erevin, and I want to understand how this Gemara in Baba Kama makes sense with this Gemara in Sanhedrin, because I don't just want to learn this Gemara that's in front of me like you, Rashi. I want to understand the whole corpus of Torah Shebaal Peh and how this all fits together, which is why almost every page you'll have a Tosfos. Almost every single page of Gemara, you'll have a Tosfos that says, wait a second, how does this Gemara here make sense of that Gemara over there? Because Tosfos' goal is like to make sense of the corpus of all of Torah Shebaal Peh. You have a third group of Rishonim, which was really led by the Rif, but I will say was made famous by the Rambam, but was basically that I don't really want to like make sense of the Gemara. I want to parse out of the Gemara the Halacha L'maisa. I want to know what to do, so I'm going to codify that which is in the Gemara. And I think just as a basic level, it's important to know those three camps. They are very different. What Rashi is trying to do and what Tosfos is trying to do and what the Rambam are trying to do are extremely different. They're not trying to do the same thing. They have different goals in that which they were doing. Even that framework is important to understand the Rashi camp, the Tosfos camp, and the Rambam, Rif, Rush, and their different camps. And there is overlap. Some of these Rishonim try and explain, right? There is overlap. But it is important to understand that. Why is it important to understand that? So first of all, it's important to understand that because Rishonim like the Rambam, and I don't mean to sound heretical, the Rambam wasn't always trying to read the Gemara that's in front of you. You'll see many times people will ask questions like, but the Rambam soser this Gemara. You know, again, the Rambam wasn't necessarily so bothered by that. He may have had another Gemara that he was passing like, and he didn't really care so much that he was soser the Gemara in Sanhedrin because he was passing like the Gemara in Baba Kama, right? Rashi is not going to be soser the Gemara in Sanhedrin because Rashi is trying to explain the Gemara in Sanhedrin. And in the quite the contrary, if Rashi is soser what he says in Sanhedrin and what he says in Baba Kama, at face value, that doesn't really bother us so much because Rashi wasn't trying to be miyashev the Gemaras together. He was just trying to explain to you what you're reading in front of you. But I also think it's important because, in my opinion, the starting point of learning Biyan is just understanding what you're reading, which is why learning a Rashi is great. And I strongly, strongly recommend that actually the first place to look after Rashi, if there exists on the Masechta, it doesn't exist in every Masechta, is the Ritva or the Rashba. The reason I suggest the Ritva or the Rashba is because they are almost always trying to do what Rashi is doing, which is explain to you what the Gemara is saying. And the reason why that's valuable is because as much as we trust our own minds to analyze the Gemara, if we have another perspective besides Rashi on how to just read the Pshat of the Gemara, it opens our eyes to something totally different. Oh, that's how the Ritva read the Gemara. Oh, really? Oh, I was reading it like Rashi, right? Or we read Rashi and we say, really? That's how Rashi read the Gemara? And then we open the Ritva and we say, oh, the Ritva read the Gemara like I was thinking, right? That's how I thought you read the Gemara. But to have another Rishon, in my opinion, before we open Tosfos even, in my opinion, before we look at Tosfos, and certainly before we look at the Rambam and those who are codifying, if we want to learn Be'ian, it's extremely, extremely valuable to see another perspective on how to read this Gemara that's in front of us. It's a really helpful tool. I've always found that the Ritva, personally, is the easiest to read. The Ritva first, the Rashba, one of those two, they just read the Gemara. But if it's a Masechta that doesn't have the Ritva or Rashba, right, so another Rishon on that Masechta, Yad Rama on some Masechta, Rabbeinu Yonah on some Masechta, those. But it's so valuable to see this exact same Gemara being read with other eyes. It's not just the eyes of Rashi. The last thing that I'll share is Achronim. We don't have time to go through all Achronim. That would be a pretty amazing endeavor. But I will share what's been helpful for me as someone who's not really a Talmid Chacham, but who's playing one for you in this year. What's been helpful for me is the ones that help me, really develop a learning be'ian are the ones I would say that kind of walk you through the process. There are certain Achronim that happen to just do a really good job at kind of walking you through the thinking process. I will share with you my personal favorite, but again, that's just my personal. The Birchas Avram, Rav Avram Etlinger, who actually passed away relatively recently. He lived in Baye Vegan in Eretz Yisrael. The Birchas Avram is an example of one of these Achronim that he kind of walks you through, like, step by step. He reads the Gemara, he tells you, and then he says, this is what Rashi says, these are his questions on Rashi, then he quotes the Ritva, and then he says, these are why the Ritva, you know, and he kind of walks you through it. Those Svarim, besides the fact that it's not just like, again, a good Shaila with a good answer. You know, you open up Pnei Yeshua, again, Pnei Yeshua is incredible, right? You open up a Rebbe Yeager, it's amazing. Oh my gosh, Rebbe Yeager is Kasha, and this is how he answers it. That's an amazing Ian tool. Don't mistake what I'm saying. But it's very hard to then, like, replicate it. It's actually much easier if you open a sefer like the Birchas Avram. There are a few mesechtas that, again, we have Rav Salvechik's Torah on, where, again, the goal is to walk you through step by step of, like, how they were thinking in the sugya. Again, those I just find personally, it's not just that it gives you good Torah, it actually helps you to start to think that way. Oh, this is how they read the Rashi, this is how they read the Ritva, this is how they read the Rashba, this is what they're doing at the Rambam. And then, slowly but surely, hopefully, we can start to develop, again, that way of thinking, the way that they present it. Because some of it is just like modeling. The same way in like sports, right? Sorry for the sports analogy to end, right? The same way in sports, when you start to like have muscle memory, right? You start to just like do something a certain amount of times that your muscles, you know it without knowing it. So I do think that in learning, there's an aspect of that as well. That when you start to like read a certain mahalach of a certain, you know, Acharon enough times, you learn the Berachas Avram enough times, you start to almost anticipate the way that he thinks. You start to almost, again, be able to do that. You're not on his level. Certainly I'm not on his level, but you start to like almost thinking that way. And I find that that's extremely, extremely helful. So again, I hope this was helpful. I hope that this was worthwhile. At first and foremost, I'll just chazer quickly. Learning be'ian, the value of learning be'ian, asei taras chakeva, that Rav Aaron Lichtenstein was sharing with us is that there's a, it's not just a for the Rosh Yeshiva and for the Bnei Yeshiva to learn be'ian, but that idea that, I'll read it again, the extent that a person is not befabel l'chachma and does not strive to even though mitol davar, then he has not been kavei ha'itim. That kavei ha'itim is defined by actually trying to understanding it, to try and pummel the depths, to try and really understand what's going on and really get deeper. Hopefully we shared a few tips and tools, kind of overarching principles on what it means and how to start that learning be'ian. And then in the next 2 weeks, I will try my best to kind of walk through a few sugyas together, and kind of go through a little bit of what we spoke about, but more just like the lens with which we can look at a sugya, and hopefully, maybe, that'll be helpful for us in the future. If you have questions, I'm happy to take them, but we're gonna dive in Marv. I'll take them afterwards. Everyone have a great night.